This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Great to speak. I was first exposed to or introduced to Madeline Arikar's work through Bobby about a year ago. And over the past year, we've had an ongoing dialogue about how what I do can maybe fit together with their philosophy. And that dialogue has kind of resulted in what I'd like to present here today, so I hope you enjoy it. Just a couple weeks ago in one of the medical journals, the Journal of the American Medical Association, was an article that I thought was somewhat timely, where they looked at a million singleton births in Norway between 1967 and 1988, and they looked at the babies that were born preterm versus the babies that were born at term, which is 37 to 42 weeks. And there was an interesting finding in the preterm group, and that was that there was an increased mortality for those babies into childhood, lower educational attainment, less likely to reproduce, and the females that were born were actually at an increased risk for having preterm deliveries themselves. So from this, we can kind of see how what's going on in utero may very well affect what's happening later on in life. And this picture, I think, really demonstrates that nicely. And also, this picture actually is kind of showing motion. And in a way, perhaps pregnancy is a procedural architecture for the fetus, the baby, the subsequent child, and adult that grows up from them. So what must be done? In our conversations, we feel that the architectural body should be stretched to include the fetus. We should consider architectural surround of the fetus in order to address the future of Homo sapiens sapiens, and a tentative model of gestational bioscleave, as we call it, is going to ascertain the scales of action critical for reversible destiny. In the 4th century BC, Aristotle said, "The womb is the field of generation, and if this field be corrupted, it is in vain to expect any fruit, though it be ever so well sown." And I think it's remarkable that this concept of the importance of the environmental surround of the womb was noted this long ago. The accompanying sketch by Da Vinci actually shows the architectural surroundings of the fetus, including the uterus, the placenta, and there's other structures involved. And this is what makes up the fetal architectural body. Fetal architectural body consists of both maternal and fetal tentative constructings toward a holding in place. The fetus and the maternal architectural surround construct the fetal architectural surround, or tactically posed surround. And we must, because of this unique interactively dependent or dependently interactive relationship, if we want to understand ourselves, we must better understand the organism that fetus is, as we've termed it. This picture actually shows the actual biologic surround of the fetal architectural body. It includes the fetus, or the body proper, as well as the atmospheric components such as the placenta, the amniotic fluid, the uterus, maternal blood flow to the placenta, fetal blood flow to the placenta. And that last component, the maternal blood flow, emphasizes the dynamic nature of the fetal architectural surround. Today we propose several courses of action. These are ideas, thoughts, concepts. Perhaps there are even landing sites which we need to consider as part of our architectural surround in order to understand our current place in the world. They are open documents, not terminal points, and should be used as a catalyst for future research. The first one is that a fetal architectural body has actual biologic developmental plasticity and therefore is the ideal target within Biosclave to achieve a reversible destiny. I'd like to talk about this a little bit more from a biologic standpoint. The Barker hypothesis was, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it was proposed in 1986 by Professor David Barker in Southampton, England. And this is the scientific notion, which is also called the fetal origins of adult disease hypothesis. The concept states that events which occur in utero in the fetal environment, such as impaired fetal growth, have downstream effects in later life. And there's actually very excellent data, scientific data, that supports this concept, showing that it can be associated with type 2 diabetes or impaired glucose tolerance or reduced insulin sensitivity, vascular disease such as stroke, hypertension, or coronary artery disease, and even negative effects on the immune system. This diagram just shows the various entities that can affect the fetal architectural surround, resulting in prenatal change of the fetus. And they include things such as maternal weight and diet, uteroplacental blood flow, transfer of nutrients and oxygen across the placenta, as well as the fetal genetic makeup. It's also interesting that this concept was proposed as early as 1933 in the medical literature by Mellenby, and he wrote that the ability of a mother to nourish her baby is partly determined by her own experience in utero and by her childhood growth. In addition, he said that the fetus responds not only to conditions at the time of the pregnancy, but also to conditions occurring potentially several decades before. So this concept of developmental plasticity is important in our understanding of evolutionary biology. It's the process by which organisms modify their behavior, morphology, physiology, in response to changing environments, and this can result in permanent and profound changes in the organism's structure. Unfortunately, the trade-off is that the changes which occur in order to increase survival during the fetal period can actually lead to these negative effects later in life, like diabetes and heart disease that I mentioned before. Developmental plasticity is both predictive and adaptive, terms which were proposed by Professor Peter Gluckman in Auckland, New Zealand. Adaptive from an evolutionary context in that the fetus will make changes in order to enhance its reproductive fitness. Predictive in that the fetus is making these adjustments in response to its immediate conditions, anticipating its future environmental surround. In this way, the fate of the organism is determined. We can see how these concepts are important for reversible destiny to be accomplished. A fetus plus placenta plus uterus organism coordinates itself on many scales of action which are necessary for survival. The fetal architectural body is necessarily positioned in its architectural surround, which is in itself positioned within the maternal architectural body plus surround. These scales of action which we speak on maternal and paternal genetic factors, nutrition including maternal blood flow and oxygenation, environmental factors such as the maternal architectural surround, as well as other deterministic and random processes. This cartoon shows the early stages of fetal development, which is important to understand if we are to be more cognizant of the fetal architectural surround. The gestational architectural surround includes the fertilized egg and the fallopian tube, which then becomes a zygote, morula, blastocyst, and the embryo, which subsequently implants in the lining of the uterus. The next course of action is we must develop maternal architectural procedures in order to enhance this so-called biologic plasticity of the fetus. These architectural procedures will lead to unquestionable changes within the fetal architectural surround. I think it's important to understand some genetic concepts which are directly applicable to what we're talking about here today. In this picture, we see the nucleus of the cell, which contains the chromosomes, which then contain the DNA, which is basically the biologic basis of who we are. What's happening at a genetic level when the fetus alters its outward expression based on its architectural surround is called an epigenetic phenomenon. An epigenetic effect can determine that the exact same genetic makeup will produce a variety of different expressions. This occurs by processes such as DNA methylation, chromatin remodeling, long-range control of chromatin structure, and genomic imprinting. This epigenome, as it's called, is most susceptible to environmental factors during embryogenesis, since the DNA synthetic rate is at its highest. This last concept that I mentioned, genomic imprinting, is important in seeing one way or scale of action in which both the mother and fetus contribute to the fetal architectural surround. Imprinting refers to a process in which there is differential expression of maternally and paternally derived genes. Maternal derived genes actually decrease the growth of the fetus and conserve resources for future offspring, thus favoring maternal survival. paternally derived genes increase growth of the fetus by using maternal resources, thus favoring both fetal and placental growth and survival. There's a whole number of diseases that occur because of these types of events. In this way, there's a balance between the supply of nutrients from the mother and the demand of nutrients to the fetus and placenta. To expand these ideas to the architectural philosophy of Arakawa and Ginz, we note that fetal architectural procedures are often disguised as architectural procedures unknowingly. And therefore, biotopological thinking begins in utero, where the fetal architectural surround is defined within the placenta plus amniotic fluid plus maternal blood flow, etc. The organism that fetuses stretches and contracts, offering response to the expressions of the placenta plus amniotic fluid, which accommodates the maternal organism. And the dynamic nature of maternal blood flow is important to the fetal architectural surround. The embryonic architectural body and the state of the fetus within its mother's form a unique symbiotic relationship during pregnancy. Most importantly, however, is that the fetus has temporary immune privilege, which is kind of interesting, from the maternal immune system. The maternal organism does not reject the fetus. In this way, the fetus actually vitalizes its own innate and adaptive immune systems. We must designate architectural procedures for the organism that fetuses, and second, we must appoint or instruct fetal landing sites. The embryonic model of landing site configurations is dependent on fetal and maternal architectural procedures. Thus, embryonic positioning above the endometrium of the uterus before implantation is an example of a fetal landing site. So, what really is a fetal landing site? It's a neutral place marker. In our conversations, we determined that an organism that fetuses does not parse the world like an organism that persons, or does it? We don't know, and maybe it does. Rather, it absorbs the parsing of the worlds as we have discussed. We proposed the concept of holding of the world. An organism that fetuses does not parse, it holds, it absorbs everything. Thus, fetal landing sites abound within maternal landing sites. Embryonic implantation, when the embryo situated over the endometrium, which is the lining of the uterus, implants into the wall of the uterus, is another example, potentially, of a fetal landing site. Question: can embryonic landing site configurations be independently determined or adequately charted? That is a question we would like to further explore. Since we are discussing reversible destiny, another interesting biologic concept is the gene action involved in aging. There's ongoing research seeking genes involved in aging. Genes involved in the production of leptin, for example, which is involved in fat synthesis, and for lipoproteins, which is involved in cholesterol synthesis, have been found to be associated with aging. Longevity assurance genes are genes which enhance the structure and function of the organism. The notions of antagonistic pleiotropy and mutation accumulation refer to the selection of genetic alleles due to enhanced reproductive fitness. However, later in life, when they are expressed, they unfortunately may have a negative effect, like we have talked about. The term gerontogens has been used by researchers to describe any factor which might modulate the pathobiology of aging. We see that maternal organisms nourish, sustain, prolong the organism that fetuses. The placenta plus amniotic fluid plus maternal blood flow, etc., is a tutelary abode or tactically posed surround that poses architectural procedures to the fetus. Finally, scales of action are dependent upon the resources of the mother in conjunction with her architectural surround. Another biologic and final biologic example of these concepts is preterm delivery. There's actually very little known about it and a lot known about it at the same time, and we still don't completely understand preterm delivery as scientists. There's excellent evidence that suggests that preterm delivery is the fetal response to a stressful or non-friendly intrauterine environment. In this way, the mother's architectural surround sends information to the fetus, which then subsequently responds by initiating labor. Both maternal nutritional status and psychosocial stress have been consistently shown to be involved in preterm delivery. As we have talked about with the concept of genomic imprinting, we see that there are both maternal and paternal contributions to the organism that fetus is, and if we do not optimize our own life, we will affect our children and our children's children, etc. This will have a great effect on our ability to achieve a reversible destiny. Arakawa and Ginz have said that coordinating research projects from diverse fields requires knowing where to place the emphasis, and hardly anyone knows how to do this in our time. Gluckman has proposed the scientific research directives listed here, including evaluating the pathways and mechanisms of developmental plasticity, markers of environmental changes, and the feasibility, cost, and benefit of intervention. One of the ideas we must include in our research directives is the architectural philosophical concepts proposed by Arakawa and Ginz in order to solve this puzzle. This is one proposed model of the gestational bias cleave, and the model can be stretched and contracted by all of us here today by developing fetal architectural procedures and landing sites for the fetus. I hope this has helped with the first initial embryonic states which are required within our gestational bias cleave in order to achieve a reversible destiny. I project this poem by Colleen Thibodeau from Canada on the screen. It may seem nonsensical to us at first when we first look at it and even when we read it, and I'm not going to read it to you. But Thibodeau makes words which are phonetically possible by bringing together sounds, conjunctions, and standard ordering principles of English, which then elicits the potentials of language. This even leads to meaning different from what we're taught to expect, but meaning nonetheless. We must find meaning in our understanding of the philosophical architecture of Arakawa and Madeline Ginz. T.S. Eliot said that genuine poetry can communicate before it is understood. Arakawa and Ginz's work is indeed poetry. It has communicated to each and every one of us here today, which is precisely why we are here. We're here to discuss their work, to expand their work. The meaning we will find is for a reversible destiny. Thank you.